Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Thank you for joining us today. And you know who else I want to thank for joining me today is my special co-host, Christine Rigby, one of my favorite people on the planet who's never been on the show before.
That's true.
And is this your first podcast experience of all time?
Let me think. Because I did buy myself recording equipment, but I don't think anything ever became of it. So I'm going to go ahead and say yes. That little silver board over there makes it real.
I was going to suggest we just skip the story and say yes.
Yes.
Because it should be. This should be, because it's all downhill after this. This is the peak of your podcasting experiences. And
I feel like you're cursing me.
I would never do such a thing. But you know what? Speaking of cursing, it's something we can't do on this show. And if we do, it'll get bleeped. But it'll probably happen anyway. I'm just warning the audience. Prepare yourselves. This is too exciting because we're watching a very exciting movie. Again, continuing the trend of 2019, every movie we've recorded so far has been a movie I haven't seen. And in this case, it's Videodrome. And how did we get Videodrome? How did we obtain a copy of it, Christine? Explain this to the audience.
Let me tell you this incredible story full of, I don't know if we would call them purposeful. If it's purposeful, is it still a synchronicity? Anyways.
It is. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I love the police.
I went down to, wait, I do too. That's crazy. I went down to Atlanta's one and only remaining physical brick and mortar video rental store, conveniently named Videodrome, which I think is still like maybe the one fond thing in my heart that I love about Atlanta. And anyone as obsessed with David Cronenberg as me is my friend. They have an entire section of Cronenberg films, and I just went in, picked up the box that was labeled the same as the door I just entered, and left and
so
came here.
So we rented Videodrome from Videodrome.
You're really good at summarizing.
This is what I do. That's what having a podcast is all about. That's it. That's the end of the episode right there.
There it is.
We can't top that. But I've never seen this movie.
But Sean, have you seen any other David Cronenberg movies?
I have. I've seen The Fly, which I love.
Yes.
And I only just saw that maybe, well, now it's been about 6 years, I want to say. So not that, I mean, yeah, that about that long ago. That's half a decade. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but I've seen that, and I've seen A History of Violence.
Okay, whoa.
Which was the first David Cronenberg I saw, which is super weird.
Oh, yeah, don't do it backwards.
Yeah. And uh-oh. My doctor said the same thing. But I think I watched that because it was Viggo Mortensen, and it had just come out, and it was like a big, like, oh, this movie, it's based on a comic book, it's super crazy, and you should see it. And I watched it, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this movie, but The Fly I loved. I would love to go back to A History of Violence at some point, but I don't really have much frame of reference for David Cronenberg other than that movie.
Well, The Fly, yeah, and The Fly really actually came at, like, his zenith. That was what made his name big. Like, Videodrome had come out in 83, and I want to say The Fly was, like, 87.
Yeah.
So he was sort of grinding his way through the body horror genre that some say he kind of invented. And, yeah, so if you don't kind of know that history, the history of body horror, if you will, then you...
it's my favorite kind of horror.
Then that's what made the man. But did you even know that the store Videodrome existed, or am I also the one that told you about that?
I'd seen it before.
Okay.
But
okay.
You were the one brilliant enough to suggest that we rent Videodrome from Videodrome, and I want to give you full props for that.
Yes.
So despite having known the store existed, I do feel like you deserve all the thanks.
And we'll just
all the blessings. May they rain down upon you.
Thank you. And we'll release the teaser for episode 2 of Christine on this podcast.
Yes, yes. We're going to do, because the struggle was, do we watch Videodrome rented from Videodrome, or do we watch Christine with Christine? The Wes Craven movie. Was it?
What?
No, it's John Carpenter.
Thank you.
Wes Craven did another movie I just found out about,
Kristen,
called Swamp Thing, which is the episode before this is Some Like It Hot, which I did with Carly Cooper, who is currently working on the practical effects and makeup effects for the Swamp Thing show that they're producing for DC. So we talked about that, and I was very shocked that Wes Craven did that. Christine is done by another horror master, John Carpenter. And it's apparently terrible.
It is, but I feel like, well, it's funny because John Carpenter and David Cronenberg sort of have similar like lives and trajectories in the movie world, and they both kind of live at that weird fringe level where like just enough people know about them. They both kind of had that one film that reached critical success, and I would say for John Carpenter it was Christine, and for Cronenberg it was The Fly. But then other than that, they sort of tried and failed multiple times. And
well, Cronenberg's still well respected. Like, I mean, he's made A History of Violence. He made Eastern Promises.
I feel like people hated both of those movies.
Oh, maybe they did. But History of Violence, I know, is very highly regarded by a lot of film snobs like me, except I just said I didn't really like it that much, but I didn't dislike
it. That's exactly what a film snob would say.
Cronenberg was always like, because he did body horror, but then it was like, I don't know, Carpenter always felt very sophisticated. There's something about the term body horror, quote unquote, that is like, you think of like the slimiest, most like B-movie level horror type movie.
Yes.
And he kind of never really, like, he was like, I'm fine doing that. He basically made it an art form, from what I understand.
I would say he kind of sidestepped, like, what we would call classic or slasher horror. Because there only really was, and I'm just kind of thinking about this now in my own mind, so I'm sorry if it's stream of consciousness style.
This is perfect.
But I feel like if you watch horror coming up through the ranks, it was very, even Alfred Hitchcock, who we consider sophisticated, you know, Psycho was a slasher.
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a slasher. Like, everything horror was kind of a slasher. And what I love about Cronenberg, and I don't think I knew this when I discovered him, but obviously it's hard to ignore once you do find him, is that his brand of horror, we call body horror, but it's really like him turning horror inside out on itself. Mm-hmm. And instead of being afraid of what comes from without and jump scares you and like murders you and the ones you love or your cool friends, it's like what kind of oozes out of you and the sort of stink and filth that's, you know, imminent in the human flesh,
right,
that it just haunts you by the very fact of it being you. So it's like it's existential horror, which I love. And like,
yes,
he uses the body as his
the
way
metaphor.
Of showing, yes, the metaphor. Cause it's like, if anything is, he had to show like your body changing, because it's like he believes that reality is like neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And the way like Sean sees the world is not the same way Christine sees the world. And like, people are always playing with
that's
manipulating
news to me.
That.
This is breaking on Missing Frames, everybody. I thought that's the reason I had you on the show, but sorry, go ahead.
Well, oh God, we'll come back to it later. but yeah, so he has to show like the body changing to show like how reality is so tenuous and like it's horrific.
Well, that's what I remember about The Fly. I mean, The Fly is just fantastic, and it's gory and it's gross, and Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis
are so romantic.
Amazing. It's so romantic. It's a great love story. But it's like, I mean, and it's been a while, as we've established, since I've seen it. But from what I recall, it's basically a scientist trying to, isn't he like inventing a technology to transport himself?
A teleportation.
But something that he intends, like, oh, this is going to be a major breakthrough. And it's like basically like, yes, the innovation of man, the intelligence and the intellect and this incredible gift that this guy wants to give mankind. And it ends up being his downfall. And of course, his turning into like the worst, grossest possible creature imaginable.
Yes. And at one part, like, he actually does, like, you see him rationalizing his own grotesqueness.
Yes.
And it's like kind of parodying how people will turn, you know, their failures of sort of narcissistic flight into some sort of a benefit. They're
I
like,
just
yes,
remember
this
him.
Is great.
I remember him crawling on the wall, and I don't remember exactly, but this is one of the standout lines because I thought it was so funny. But he's like, I don't even know what's going on, and something falls off of him, and he goes, "What's that? I don't know." It's like that sums up that movie pretty perfectly.
Yep.
But you're like, so Videodrome, one of your favorite movies, probably.
I don't know if it's my favorite. I think it was the one when I was going through like an art school phase, literally, because I was in school for not art and I was hanging out with a bunch of people who were in film studies. So I was trying to get on their level, and I loved movies, and I was just looking for the weirdest out there. So of course I rented, you know, Eraserhead. Mm-hmm. And then of course I found Videodrome, and that would just seem like the most logical portal, which is kind of funny if you given some imagery that you'll see later on.
Spoilers.
It was like a good portal into his world. And so it was just the first one that I saw of his work, and therefore it had the most indelible effect on me.
Okay.
I'm actually interested because, as with Eraserhead and a lot of the other arts house cinema that I was watching at the tender age of like 17, 18, I don't quite remember it all. I remember the most fantastic.
Is that the last time you've seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm not a revisitor. Like, okay. I have favorites, and then I don't end up ever going back to them. I just hold them in my heart, and then I probably mutate the memory.
I've tried to do that. Yeah. Well, I've tried to do that lately. There are movies I can never, like Star Wars, which I've seen so many times, I can never unsee it. But like lately I've tried to do that because I realize I like wear this movie out and I still love it, but it's like once it loses its specialness, you kind of have to accept that it will never be the same. So I've tried to do that. I can't, I'm terrible at it, but it is, I admire that.
Thank you. I think it stems from me rewatching Thumbelina as a younger adult.
Which was, I think, the inspiration for Videodrome, from as I understand
from all the records that we have. Yes. No, but don't rewatch that movie. I'm telling you, it's awful.
Okay, I will not rewatch Thumbelina. So this is the first time you've watched it in so many years. Mm-hmm. I've seen The Fly, I've seen History of Violence, and then Videodrome I've always wanted to see. And Scanners is the one with the head explosion.
Yeah.
Right? I've seen that.
That's
like part.
Right, exactly. No, that's, you've seen the movie. I tried watching that. I couldn't even finish it. That's a one-trick pony. I've seen everything he's ever made, and Scanners is my least favorite.
Oh, wow. Okay. Lots of people would take you to task for that. If you had one thing to say, okay.
Email Sean if you want to fight me.
No! Don't email me. Email Christine. It's not fair.
Do not give them my email address.
No, don't find me. But okay. I'm excited. I've been wanting to see this for a while. Is this based off a book or anything, or is it just him?
No, this is just him. He, I want to say he didn't start doing, what would you call it, like secondhand work until later in his life. Really, The Fly, because that was a remake.
He adapted Naked Lunch.
Right, and that was later.
Yeah.
So I think all of his early stuff is just him ruminating on these like body, sex, death issues that he has, and he kind of talks about it a lot, and that's why I love him, is because I feel like he's literally me.
Yeah.
Like, aww. I'm also just like a, you know, bespectacled, weirdly intellectual next door type, but secretly you think
that's
might
how
be
I
insane.
Feel, that's how I feel about myself. I've always considered myself the next door girl. Like, hey, maybe he'll ask me out. Maybe. I don't know.
But also maybe they're completely crazy.
But also maybe he's a fly monster.
Right.
That's how I feel. So great.
But no, he talks about it all the time. He's like experimenting in his work with things that when you look deep into yourself, you're like, wow, I'm a human. So I am no different than like a person who's choosing to do this with their life or do that with their life, like a murderer. There's no real wall between us. So he just like uses his characters as a way of exploring things that you literally should not or cannot do or be in this life.
So I'm going to ask you something. This is a new question I've started asking people. I've only asked somebody once. Do you think I'm going to like this movie?
You like Superman, so...
So, yes?
But
I love David Lynch.
Yeah.
I love The Fly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm into all that weird nonsense.
I think you will like it, and I think you're really good at seeing the parallels between... Like, he's basically making a big statements about commercialism, corporatism, and technology.
And being the girl next door.
And being the girl next door. Right. Yep.
That's what it all comes back to.
I think you'll like the weird imagery, especially since we watched the new Twin Peaks together. And if you like that, you'll appreciate the imagery.
Okay.
I hope Sarah likes it.
I hope so too. I don't know. I mean, we're not filming this. We're recording this in a very professional booth.
Yep.
We're not in my apartment.
Nope.
Sitting at a dining room table.
Not at all.
It's a very professional setup. I am professional.
Yep. Gray walls.
Professionally, I feel like a professional.
And you really pass that on to me. I feel pretty professional right now. Thank you, Sean.
I think so too. Let's go professionally watch Videodrome, and then we'll very professionally talk about it when we're done.
Yes, sir.
Now available to own on video cassette.
And we're back. Christine, I wasn't ready for this movie.
Really?
I was so unprepared. I don't know what I expected. I mean, I knew it was going to be weird and gory and gross. But I was so, it was so disturbing. Yep. Like the first part of this episode is me being so happy, like, let's do it. And now it's just going to be me like, what just happened? Who am I?
I'm so sorry. This happens to all my friends.
This is all your friends you show Videodrome and then they turn into Videodrome.
Yeah.
And they become the new flesh. Yep. And then that's it. They're done.
Yep. New flesh, old friends. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. The Fly like still has like the nice romance and History of Violence has like a plot. This is just a
like,
mess.
Yeah. It's like miserable. Like there, it's kind of like it's funny, but like it's super, 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 super black comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to like. The Fly is like you paint the hero as, if you want to call him a hero, as a, like a sympathetic character, and you have his wife, and it's like, oh, it's a tragic love story. And this, it's like, here's this guy played by James Woods, who it was bothering me. I'm like, I know I've seen this guy. His voice sounded so familiar to me because he's Hades in Hercules. And now I know. And
another black comedian.
Another black, yes, yeah, Hades, the black comedian. But it was bothering me. And I was like, oh my gosh, it even looks like him. But his character is so unsympathetic.
Yep.
He's like this terrible person. This guy Max basically runs a channel. Was it 83?
Channel 83.
Channel 83. And he just looks for like the worst possible like porn and violent films. And he's like, we broadcast it because, hey, we need to stand out in some way. And it is so like, this guy's like despicable. He goes on a talk show and they're like, do you think you should be more responsible? And he's like, hey, I'll tell you about responsibility. And he's hitting on this woman next to him. And she's like, oh, I like you. And
it's
like
Debbie Harry, everyone.
Yeah. So
at least we have Blondie.
That's right. So so already I'm like, this is a weird movie, which I was expecting. And then it gets weirder because he's like, come over to my place. We'll put on this little ditty called Videodrome that I was watching at work, in which people get whipped and tortured and electrocuted and they're naked. And she's like, oh, this is kind of turning me on.
Pierce my ears.
Yeah. And that's when I was like, oh my God, what are we watching? This is insane.
I think that's when we lost Sarah.
That's when we lost Sarah, my wife, who was in the room with us watching. And then she was like, I'm good. This is where I leave. And yeah, I was like, okay, it's that kind of, we're just going to go in that direction. Great. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready for it to be so like, it made me feel icky.
Well, yeah. It's, it
I
is,
guess
it's,
I should have expected that.
Body horror. Yeah, yeah. Icky, like weird, fringe. But I can't believe, because I feel like the beginning of the new Twin Peaks was to me so like gross and icky and like, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
But did this feel, this felt different?
Yeah, I guess it's because it's so Cronenberg, Lynch is more surrealist. Mm-hmm. Cronenberg is surrealist, but it's all very concrete. It's mm-hmm. all like, it's happening to you, yeah. And it's gross, and your things are happening, and your body's transforming. Whereas Lynch, it's like, oh, I'm stuck in a bad dream, and like, terrible things are happening. But I think the gore and the body effects, which Lynch kind of delves into a little bit, but he's more about like the nightmarish imagery versus like the, oh, I'm gonna make out with my creepy television type deal.
but
like, you know, the first couple episodes of Twin Peaks The Return are horrifying. I don't know, maybe it's just the fact that I don't necessarily feel like it was, because there was the emotional disconnect. You don't really like Max that mm-hmm. much,
no.
Which is fine. James Woods is great, and he plays the part well. And it's not like he walks the line between like, this character's pretty unlikable, but you don't like outright dislike him. Like, you're not like, God, I wish I hate this guy. I wish right. I was watching anybody else. And the movie is so intriguing and fascinating and engaging that you're just like, I can't stop watching.
Mm-hmm.
But with Twin Peaks, at least it's like, oh, I like these characters and what's happening. I don't quite know what's happening. With this, you kind of never know what's happening, but you're always like, on edge because something horrible is just right around the corner.
Yeah, or already there. Like, I think that's what I like about him is that he loves crafting that scene that you're looking at. Like, he's very much within the frame. And I feel like he puts everything there for a reason. I almost feel like he's Lynchian in the sense that I could see him, like, putting, you know, coffee beans under the counter, like something that you wouldn't even see, like details that build the world. Although it is shocking because even though it's so visually compelling, he's very clinical in the sense that you don't connect with anyone, really.
Yeah.
It's almost like everyone is a substitute for a metaphor. And even the names feel like odd jokes.
Yeah.
Such that...
like, what was Oblivion? Dr. Oblivion?
Dr. Brian Oblivion, who only, as far as you meet him as a character, only he refuses to be interfaced with other than as on a television
he's like,
personality.
He's like, I don't ever want to be on television, but I am only... on television.
Yes.
I think maybe the difference between Lynch and Cronenberg is a bit more clinical almost. Like, it's a very corporate, you know, I've only seen this and The Fly and History of Violence. And History of Violence is a little bit outside the norm because I think it takes place in like a small town and stuff. But it's very Lynch is like, oh, it's the suburban neighborhood. It could happen to you, where this feels very disconnected from reality. It doesn't feel like much like, it's like the urban landscape where it's grungy and weird, but it's like this, all these people in these towers and like working for these corporations and television and these shady businesses, like what was it?
Spectacular optical,
which they really should have called it Spectacular Optical. Optacular.
Yeah.
I would have been very happy with that. But maybe that's the difference. There's almost like the normal, like, gosh gee whiz quality of David Lynch is not at all in David Cronenberg's work.
Yeah, they're very different people.
Yes.
And I would say the things that David Lynch explores are similar, but somehow so incredibly different.
Yeah.
Or at least I feel that Lynch is, even though we're calling Cronenberg more clinical, I feel like Lynch is more of an observer, whereas maybe Cronenberg is more of a feeler.
Yeah, visceral. He wants you to feel like a visceral reaction to everything that's going on.
Which I think you do.
Yes. which I did, as I'm sure you noticed.
My skin is still crawling. But I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I was doing a little bit of reading before the podcast, obviously. But I don't really think that I agree with a lot of it. And actually, I was having trouble formulating my own opinions again on this second rewatch. Mm-hmm. I think I just like how awful he makes me feel because he does not shy away from these images. But I mean, obviously, like, this movie was made, I don't know, in the 80s. So 20, maybe even 30 years before, no, 20 years before we got the internet, right? 10, 15?
Yeah. Somewhere. Probably like 24. Internet, like, I mean, the internet existed in like the mid 90s, early 90s, but it like didn't really take off to the late 90s. So, like, what, 25 years or so before
something
the internet?
Like that. Nobody do the math. just stay with us. But so, I mean, I think it was cool. It's cool because he was taking television, which was, you know, not necessarily a benevolent gift from the gods, and sort of taking it to this extreme level and without really going into an internet-y place. He saw something that could all at once intrigue you with its ability to offer you images that you couldn't get anywhere else. Mm. And there's been stuff on the internet that's insane. Like that one internet personality that walked into the Japanese suicide forest or whatever. Do you remember this?
No. Christine, I don't.
Yeah.
Please tell me more, because clearly this is something you know about.
It is. No, but I'm really bad at keeping up with stuff. But it was some kid, some blonde sort of fraternity type dude who was an internet personality. And he was like, let me just walk into this Japanese suicide forest. It's like a very well-known place in Japan where you go to hang yourself because suicide's giant over there. And he found somebody. And it was just this outrage because everyone was like, this is sort of a weird thing to be doing on the internet. Also, that's privacy for these people that just want to go quietly hang themselves in the woods.
They don't want to be internet celebrities at all.
Right. And so I feel like Cronenberg was sort of presciently looking at that ability that we were going to have. And the fact that we would have this MSG level sort of turn off of our mental taste buds, and we would need like more and more imagery. And I mean, that's definitely not the case for everyone, but I mean, memes, for example, like you don't just get one, you get like one per day. Mm-hmm. They're morphing at an amazing rate.
Right.
And they're just, you know, the images are just flooding in, and it's also kind of tailored to your interests.
Right.
And it's just,
well, it's the character, all the characters who are actively involved with the story, actively involved with the whatever it is, whether it's Max or what's her name or anybody,
Nikki,
they're all very emotionally disconnected from the acts.
Yeah.
And like what they're doing, and just everything. Like it's like, it is very, it's interesting because it's clearly it's a commentary on television. Mm-hmm. And like, what won't people, like at what point are people going to be, you need, entertainment keeps needing to top itself, and people are like, they get bored real easily and they want the next biggest, bestest thing ever. So what happens when that goes beyond normal and it gets to the point where it's a problem? And without, I think, realizing it, Cronenberg basically predicted the internet, which is like, it's not like he is the only filmmaker or the only writer or storyteller to come up with this kind of idea, but in a very, because it's a visual medium, in a very visceral way, he explores the idea of that kind of almost emotional, just like sterility. Is that the right word?
Yeah,
like,
no,
it's just like emotional, like nobody feels anything.
Right.
Everyone's just looking for the next fix because they're incapable of feeling, and the only thing, like, they have to get it has to be as gross and as awful as possible to elicit any reaction at all.
Yeah.
And in this case, it backfires on poor Max.
Quite literally.
Who gets a little stomach thing.
Yeah, the stomach vagina, the infamous stomach vagina, into which he puts in and pulls out all sorts of goodies.
Right.
But mostly the symbols of videos and violence, literally.
Yes. They feed
him tapes and
violence
guns
through
yes.
him in a very sexual image. And it's great.
It's also interesting that the sort of benevolent characters, or that you think would be the saviors who own Cathode Ray Mission, where the homeless come to watch TV and eat, which is Brian Oblivion and his daughter, what was it, Bianca Oblivion. Mm. They also are just sort of, they almost aren't there.
Yeah.
Because one is literally a televised performance.
The question is, because at the end they reveal, Max, you've been hallucinating this since you met, what's her name? I keep forgetting her name.
Nikki.
Mm-hmm. You met Nikki. She was a hallucination we created to entice you into the world of Videodrome. So you, everyone could not be real. Everyone could not be real. There's a point in the movie where it's like, I don't know what is happening and what's not happening. And I'm okay with, I give myself up to the movie. The weirder it is, I'm like, I don't care. I don't really need an explanation. And this movie's the same thing. I'm like, give me all the weird. I don't want to know what's happening. I don't really need to know what's happening. But this movie definitely, at a certain point, is like, yeah. Everything could or could not be real. And it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, in a way, I guess I choose to look at it as this sort of like hermetically sealed bubble of his own imagination, I guess. And, you know, as in, you can't take anyone's words to importantly in this film, but like when Brian Oblivion says his thing over and over, where the TV screen has become the retina for the mind's eye. And so it's like, whatever you choose to put in is what you're going to get. And I feel like Max, the main character, kind of goes on this landslide of feeding himself these images. And then it funnels into like the ultimatum at the end.
Because he basically is like, your perception is your reality. So to him, it doesn't matter. It's all really happening.
Right.
And it's just when other people try to interact with his hallucinations that they're like, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
But as far as he's concerned, the fact that he sees it and the fact that he believes it is enough to make it real.
Yeah. I mean, would you almost compare it to the ending of North?
North, the classic Rob Reiner film that has inspired so many generations of filmmakers. If you don't mind a spoiling audience, the ending of North, I guess it was supposed to be like a Wizard of Oz type deal where it's like North wakes up and it was all a dream and everything's okay. Unfortunately for Max and Videodrome, that's not what happened. He never wakes up. And in fact, he just has to embrace the new flesh and blow his brains out.
Yeah.
And I was afraid that because in the movie, he shoots himself in the head and the TV explodes. And I thought, oh, God, he's going to shoot himself and my TV's going to explode. And I thought you had just come over to destroy my television.
It didn't happen, folks.
It didn't happen. Sadly, that would have been a really I would have been like, best movie ever. Right. Amazing.
What
I need
is
a new
real
television. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It would have been great. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But are there any, what are some like standout visual moments for you from this movie?
Basically, from start to finish, it gives you a ton.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, it's all pulsating technology, which if you get excited about, you should also watch his movie Existenz, which is the video game version of Videodrome.
Oh, great.
But yeah, so we've got, you know, the TV that he's like stroking and it's undulating and
yes.
becoming veinous and it's, you know, responding to his
right,
touch.
The sexy TV.
The sexy TV,
yeah.
if you want it.
And
once again, great at summarizing.
I was not, I had like a giant mouth and I was like, oh, this is kind of sweet. This
kind
is romantic.
Of, yeah,
and he like
tender.
Just shoves his face into the rubbery television screen, makes out with it.
Which I mean is the same as swiping left on Tinder.
It's practically
so
the same thing. So I think we can agree Cronenberg called Tinder.
He invented the internet.
Yes.
What else? Oh, so we've got the first time he touches the personal message that he gets from Brian Oblivion, the cassette tape,
mm-hmm.
that the little spinning discs that move the footage just become like little like boobies that sigh.
Right, right. Everything.
That was beautiful.
It reminds. Did you ever play any of the Silent Hill games?
I actually was too scared.
Yeah.
To do
well,
that.
I mean, they're pretty terrifying, but Silent Hill clearly got some inspiration from this movie. Just like
really?
the
after sighing boobies. That's
yeah.
What you think
well,
of
there's
Hill?
There's kind of in Silent Hill 2 especially. There's like a kind of like creepy, disturbing sexual undertone to it, and like all these like very disturbing images that it just reminded me a lot of. Videodrome reminded me a lot of Silent Hill 2, and it just felt very much like they got some level as far as the creatures and the creepy like gross effects.
Yeah.
A lot of that came from this movie, I suppose.
Maybe on the sequel to this podcast, Missing Games.
Oh,
I can play Silent
look
Hill.
At you.
Boom,
it's happening.
Can
but,
I throw your mic on the floor?
Yeah, don't.
Okay.
Don't. My television, you already blew that up. We don't need to break everything else.
Well, let's stick with that for a second, because even though you've only seen History of Violence and The Fly, you and the now Videodrome,
yeah.
You may have noticed a theme, which is just that no matter what the other visuals are, like Cronenberg is a sexualizer. Like
yeah.
that is his.
Well,
it's
I
not
wasn't
even
expecting,
an undercurrent.
Yeah,
it's
I,
a current.
I was not expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that threw me off. Like when they have the creepy scene and they're piercing or he's piercing her ears and
yeah.
stuff. I was not expecting it mm-hmm. to be so graphic.
Oh yeah.
Like it was like, oh, this is happening and it's 15 minutes into the
yep,
movie.
If that.
It's like I better put like I was like I knew it was gonna be disturbing, but it was just like that was just such a strange and creepy. I was like, well, I better brace myself and just completely shift whatever I thought this was gonna be, whatever mindset I was in before.
Oh, definitely.
That's and what I mean. I was
he'll,
not prepared.
He'll get you every time.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing is once you know his, I don't want to call it a formula, but just the way he sees the world, it makes more sense, I guess. And you, I guess, I just see it coming at this point every
right.
time. But no, he's very much, I guess, like sex, desire, death. He just kind of sees them all on a spectrum, and he actually has some interesting quotes about like desire and how life is desire. And this is actually in his new book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, even your desire for a new, you know, a new computer is like a life force in a way.
Right.
So even if you have the tiniest desire, it can keep you going. And that once your desire ends, your life ends. And it's kind of something that I feel like I've received as a sort of general truth of life, is that there is this undercurrent of like life energy that you could even call like sexual energy
mm-hmm.
that keeps this whole game running. And so he just kind of takes it to an extreme, because you only have an hour and a half anyway in film, and is like, look at this, the connection of humans, like we're going to grab out for things and we're going to desire things. And that desire, like the need to live mm-hmm. or to die, it's like, it's so strong that it's almost sexual.
Right.
Like just to, you know what I mean? Like any
this
connection
is like
you have.
So everyone listening is basically experiencing what I experienced watching Videodrome. They're like, I tuned into Missing Frames. It's wacky talk. Sean talks
Sorry,
about movies,
guys.
And now we're dealing with all kinds of psychological, disturbing imagery. And that's the best thing about Videodrome. It just brings people
just so
together,
wholesome.
And it makes you want to talk about these things that you don't want to talk about,
yeah.
ever.
And actually, so that's another reason I respect him too. And I said earlier how I was gonna kind of talk about like my relationship to horror, which literally began as a relationship. Like the first guy, my first not boyfriend, was this guy who was covered in horror film tattoo sleeves, and that was his thing. And he actually tried to run a podcast for a while and like had a website reviewing horror.
Not
and
nearly as cool
no,
as me, clearly.
Not even. Love you, Keenan. anyways, but we were watching a lot of horror together, and I noticed, I began to sift out like that I think the interesting horror, and this is kind of the same way Cronenberg sees it, is like one that uses the startling imagery, but then like slips some messages in there, and it has a little bit more to say.
Yeah.
And what he says is like horror is really just a conflict, and whenever you have conflict, that's where like the learning starts.
Yeah.
Or the like, it's like the way we know a lot about our bodies through medical disease. Like that's not something we ever thought we were gonna have to deal with, mm-hmm. but instead we have to like figure out why is it doing this.
Yeah. To
and
him, it's like
more.
Body horror is the means to understand life.
I guess so.
It's like you have to, your body has to go through horrible, horrible changes for you to truly appreciate what you have.
The little things.
And it's really, what a beautiful message to send to our children.
This
one's for you, kids. It's hard. I found the movie so, I was very, very involved and very like, this is crazy,
mm-hmm.
But it's definitely like it's difficult to connect to because, and it's purposefully done this way. It's very purposefully. Nobody in the movie is likable. Everyone, you kind of hate everybody, and it's kind of you're very much an observer, and you're watching it from this very kind of distant. You're very detached from everything.
Which in a way is great.
It is. And I like that a lot. But I started thinking, I was like, I wonder if it would have worked better if it was more like The Fly, where mm-hmm. you almost have an emotional, like, this poor guy is just a victim of his circumstances. I guess it wouldn't work for this movie because it really is the ultimate failing of this guy and the ultimate flaw of his character is his, like, complete disregard for morality or taste or like he doesn't care. He is like concerned with the bottom line and how do I just get more and more people to watch my show.
And in
so
a way
like,
he was kind of perversely interested and invited it. And I think that was what was so interesting when the quirky, you know, satellite pirate who turns out to be a villain and then the spectacular optical guy who's the super villain kind of confront him at the end.
Yeah.
You know, like we are the creators of Videodrome and you're our test subject.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason being because you kind of invited us into your hearts.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a vampire has to be invited in. Like you were looking for weirder, harder you were turning down the beautiful Venetian porn,
right?
And you were looking for something to harden.
You basically brought this on you. I mean, it's like it's a tragedy in that way. This mm-hmm. guy basically is like a terrible person who invites this horrible, horrible thing to happen. And you kind of are just like, you don't really feel bad for him. You're mm-hmm. like, well, probably think twice before piercing your girl's
right.
maybe that's not the best way to show her, this woman you just met, that you care about her and like her a lot. But I just love early horror movies, like mm-hmm. low budget horror movies from great filmmakers, you know, Sam Raimi's Evil Dead movies. There's so many, like David Lynch is another good example. Eraserhead is super terrifying, but there are so many just like, there's something like just very grungy about them and very like unleashed. Like they don't really have anything to lose. So they're kind of like, I'm just going to throw everything into this movie.
Right.
It's almost like Cronenberg's mentality is Max's, where he's like, I just have to make it so disturbing that people can't not watch it.
Yeah.
How much do you think Cronenberg and Max are one in the same?
I mean, I'm sure like any good author, you kind of, in order to write a character, it's almost like breaking off a piece of yourself because you are writing it. You're like breathing life into it. So I'm sure like he talks about like using his characters as an experimental playground, like a lab to
That's
see
so
like
sweet.
So nice oh, of him. Once nice again, man. So clinical. but yeah, I feel like it's going back to that whole idea of, okay, there's the capacity in me for anything under the sun. What would it look like if, you know, the Cronenberg named Max decided he wanted to watch torture porn? But yeah, so I'm sure there's a lot of him in that character, but I feel like he also is the type that, as you can see, it's like when he's done playing with the ball, he just drops it.
Yeah,
deflates. He's like, whatever.
What was after this as far as his filmography? Hold on. I've got it pulled up here, ladies and gentlemen.
Bring it on.
So he did The Dead Zone, which is a Stephen King book I haven't read. That's a little more mainstream. A little, I don't know how, I don't know. I know The Dead Zone is like the guy can see or communicate with the dead or something like that. But I don't know how quirky and bizarre it is. I'm sure there's an element of that, but that seems a little more mainstream.
Definitely.
And then The Fly was after that. And The Fly is like super gory and gross, but it's also like tolerable in weird way.
It attracted a much wider audience.
And
I think people were able to sit through the whole thing because it did have that character drama.
I think also people just want to see Jeff Goldblum naked.
God, he's so good looking. But the only balls on him I'm attracted to are those eyeballs.
Oh.
God, they're so good.
I couldn't agree more. And then he did Dead Ringers.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Do you know Jeremy Irons?
Yes. Yeah, Jeremy Irons
is plays
great.
A set of twins
that
are obsessive gynecologists.
Oh my
god. Once again, the sexual theme is rife.
Right.
That's amazing. I saw that one at the AV club in my college.
Oh no.
Highly recommended.
This looks horrifying. And then Naked Lunch.
Yeah.
And what else?
Yeah, Lunch is going to give you a lot more. Just more of the same beautiful pulsating orifices where you wouldn't expect them.
This is just fantastic.
People
I love
putting
all of
things
it.
Into their body that they probably shouldn't.
Probably not. I don't know what else to say about this movie, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it was horrifying. really well made. Extremely effective. I'm like teetering on whether or not I loved it. I know I liked it. I don't know if I loved it because it's so cold and disturbed almost. Like it's like you don't get a lot. It's like, okay, television's bad. I get what you're saying because entertainment is.
But I could also just watch The Cable Guy.
Right, The Cable Guy. Gee, man. So it's hard to like. It's something that I feel like, you know, it's part of the Criterion Collection, and I feel like at some point in my life I'm going to own this movie.
Well, don't let the Criterion Collection influence you, but just know that love and hate
Everything
are the same
I
thing.
Everything I do in my life is dictated by what the Criterion Collection wants. They really don't know what a friend they have in me. It's a shame. Randy Newman would never sing a song about my relationship with Criterion because they just don't get it. But really, I mean, I would get it just because the movie is so striking and so memorable. It's not, I'm not going to forget it anytime soon. But also, I just want to like, I almost, you know, we usually with Missing Frames, we'll just watch the movie and come and talk about it. And what kind of sucks about that is
you're flabbergasted.
I'm flabbergasted, but I also love watching documentaries and I love doing, I tried to do a little bit of research with this one. I didn't really read anything because I didn't want to spoil myself. But, it feels like there's so much to unwrap that it's like I
want
to watch.
Do you want me to leave
features?
The Blu-ray with you so you can watch
the
features?
Maybe.
I'll do it. You have to return it within a week.
Oh, God. maybe not. But I feel like even though I don't know to what extent I enjoyed it, it's definitely one that I feel like almost like the first time I saw Eraserhead when I was like, I never want to see that again.
Right.
And now it's like, one of my all-time favorite movies,
once again,
and I'm obsessed with David Lynch.
So love, it's like, hate is just another kind of love. And I think what's cool, and once again, like, this is not my favorite Cronenberg movie. It was just my entryway, and right. it is so striking.
And we couldn't resist renting Videodrome from Videodrome.
Too good, guys. Yeah,
which is, if you're in the Atlanta area, you should definitely check them out because they're wonderful.
Just support Videodrome, guys. But I will say, like, I think I've told you that I hate Wes Anderson. That's his name, right?
Yeah. You hate Wes Anderson?
I do.
This
I hate
is
him.
Another but, podcast episode we got.
But remember, love and hate are the same thing. But I respect his visual style. I respect that he is super consistent and he has an aesthetic. And what I love about Cronenberg so much is that when you start to watch his films, you see kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. He has this love of this sort of intimate room texture and like playing with very harsh shadows and like so much blue. It's beautiful. So I don't know. I no matter what, like I love hanging out with him in film, and he's an artist.
Yeah,
I love it.
He totally is. Do you, was there anything you picked up this time that you don't, I know it's been a while since you've seen it, but was there anything you picked up on this time that you don't remember from the first time? Any themes that stood out to you or any visuals that you were kind of like, oh, I never thought of that. I didn't even notice that. I know that's tough. Again, it's been a while, but
if anything, yeah, no, it kind of threw me for a loop as well, because it's just very good at doing its job. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, it surprised me by how non in agreement with its analysis it was. Like I was trying to say, like everyone that I read that was trying to analyze it, mm-hmm. I feel like when I watch it, I disagree with that. Like, I'm just...
I would love to read some analysis, but just like David Lynch, I don't care as much about what it all means. Mm-hmm. It's like an experience that you just have to kind of absorb.
Well, no, it's funny you say that, Sean. Because Cronenberg is actually, he's a huge atheist in the sense that he doesn't even like to talk about like ghosts or spirits or anything. He basically says, reality is perception. Reality is your neurology, and it can be easily altered.
I want to come back to this, so remind me, because I'm going to forget.
I will. But one of his big quotes that I kind of read today was that human beings are so addicted to meaning that they try to find it where there is none. Mm-hmm. So this movie, for all intents and purposes, might have no meaning.
Right.
And he would probably encourage you not to go struggling to look for one if you don't need to.
Sure. So that's the difference between... Now, mm-hmm. That's concretely the difference between Lynch and Cronenberg. Lynch mm-hmm. is very spiritual.
He is.
And his movies feel very spiritual. Mm-hmm. It feels like he's found some other plane of existence.
Yes.
This, in Cronenberg's work, feels very physical.
Very
it's all
cut
about
off.
The body.
Yes.
It's all about, like, what you're experiencing is through your body.
Yes.
It's not, like... It's nightmarish, but mm-hmm. you are... physically kind of experiencing it. Not that like Lynch doesn't have that, but Lynch being very spiritual mm-hmm. and being more in that plane of like there are forces beyond what we understand, that you saying that that basically
it
makes it explicit to me what the difference between the two of them is.
Exactly. And it's almost like the ending of this movie in essentially what we would call suicide is very is in line with that sort of cut off body, sort of stuck on the ground mentality. Yeah, there is nothing else to look up to, which I don't connect with him at all. But I just think he's an amazing visual mm-hmm. artist. But yeah, I myself am more of a sort of lighthearted. I'm like a dark optimist.
Oh, like, I've always thought that about you.
Christine, the dark optimist. but yeah, so I think it is funny to sense the plasticity or the unplasticity in those two different types of filmmaking.
But right, the cynicism. Lynch is cynical,
mm-hmm.
but not most of, like, what's funny about Blue Velvet when Sarah and I watched it for Missing Frames is that's an extremely optimistic film, and it's so disturbing and upsetting, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it's, like, fine.
Yeah.
But
I mean, and that movie, a lot of people love and respect and talk about.
I mean, David Lynch, I think some of his movies are extremely cynical. Probably the majority of them are, but I don't know. It's a different kind. Of course, because they're both named David, I would have to talk about them. But because I love David Lynch so much, it seems like I have to bring him up all the time. But it is. I mean, they are very similar. They were both making movies at a similar time, kind of similar, like disturbing surrealist horror. You know, it's a similar style.
I mean, clearly David Lynch meditates and Cronenberg doesn't.
That's it. That's the only difference in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. But all right. Well, I definitely enjoyed this. I'm glad I got to see it finally. Right before bedtime. Perfect. I need to see more. What do I watch next from Cronenberg?
Oh my God. I love Existenz.
Okay.
It's little E, capital X, little I through N, and then a giant Z.
So that's 99.
Yep. Okay. And that has Jude Law and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh.
And they play a video game that ports directly into your spine.
Oh, I like it.
Mm-hmm. That's so fun. And it even has a little cameo by Willem Dafoe, who does back alley spine plugs
for
the video game.
I always love Willem Dafoe in everything. I will have to check that out. And then I guess all we have left to do is final ratings. So on a scale of 1 to 5 spectacular opticals, with 1 being the lowest and 5 being the highest, how many spectacular opticals would you give Cronenberg's Videodrome?
Is it full points or half points?
You can give half points.
Really?
If you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will say 4.5.
Okay.
Because it's lacking a certain something, but it has a giant vision.
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of stuff I try to do, where I'm like, I'm gonna cram all this stuff into one paragraph and people will get it. And then they're like,
nope.
Christine, I don't understand
what you were trying to say. Please leave. I'm gonna do 3.5 spectacular opticals, but I know I'm gonna return to this someday, and it's gonna stick with me. I just know it. It's like embedded itself into my brain,
into my stomach.
Long live the new flesh. But yeah, it's very, very memorable. It's very memorable. And I thank
you. Cronenbergians, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Cronenbergians. I appreciate it. And that's it. That's that. There's nothing else. There is, you could, you know, if you really wanted to, you could check me out on the Twitter at Yay Shonderman. You can follow me there. If you want to keep the conversation going, talk a little bit more about this movie, help me work through all my feelings about it. And Christine, you're nowhere.
I am not on the internet.
Which is such a wonderful thing.
Clearly I was influenced
by
Videodrome back in the day.
For sure.
Got off.
But the Nerd Party is on all the social media, which is the network that this show is a part of, and they're wonderful. There are tons of great shows, Star Trek, Star Wars, movies, TV, all of it. You can find it all on thenerdparty.com. You can follow the Nerd Party at Join Nerd Party on Twitter and like the Facebook page, The Nerd Party, and just plug that into your stomach and enjoy and digest it. And if you like the show, give us a 5-star rating. Consider the stars spectacular opticals and just give us 5 of them.
Yes.
That's what Christine
I'd give you 5
Christine
exploding
wants.
Intestine televisions.
Thank you. And I think on that note, that's it. You can't get much better than exploding intestine televisions.
For shooting yourself in the head.
I'm going to have a wonderful night. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless America.
God bless it.